Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Sandra Ruffo, the president of the New York State School Boards Association. She serves as a chair of the executive committee and board liaison to the resolutions committee as well. Now, the New York State School Boards Association provides advocacy, training, and information to school boards in support of their mission to govern the state's public schools. You can find out more at NYSSBA. That's how they say it. NYSSBA, NYSSBA.org. Welcome, Sandra Ruffo.
Thanks, David, for having me.
Oh, it's so great to have you. Now, we've had all your previous compatriots at the organization on the Capital Connection, including, as I recall, Bob Schneider and Tim Creamer. And we like talking to your organization because it's statewide. You represent school boards across the state. But I want to know more about you. Tell our listeners, now that you're the president of the organization, who you are and how that came to be.
Well, I'm a mom. I'm a grandma. Those are the most important things. I've been a school board member for 40 years, and I come from the southern tier of our state in Broome County. And although the issues have changed in 40 years, there's still ongoing issues, particularly it seems at this time of the year as we're gearing up for the new school year. So certainly we're a different world than we were 40 years ago. I was on a local board for 18 years, and I've been on a BOCES board for 30 years, serving as president on both of those boards. So it's really, I have to say, is a passion of mine. I love school board service. It's so important. And during a time when we see our superintendents only staying in a district a little over 6 years and board members staying only about 6 years, it's hard, and I'd like to see us turn that around because it's challenging work, and it takes a while to learn it. And I would like to see us create an environment where our superintendents and our boards are working collaboratively for the betterment of our students.
Yeah, it's always about the kids, right? And I mean, you, as I see here in your bio, 5 married children, 14 grandchildren. You have experience, a lot of experience in parenting. And I should disclose to you, both my parents and my sisters are in education. My father was a school principal, my mother a school teacher. My sister's involved in special education. So I know that in many ways, part of the problems that have affected schools is that more and more over the years, the schools often have to step in and do more discipline and take on more of a role, the parent, than just educating.
Well, that's correct. I mean, societally, we have changed. But, you know, when I started 40 years ago, when I was in school, when I was in high school, there was not a person in my class that did not have two parents. We know that's not the case now. Most people, if there's a single parent, they have to work. So children have to be in daycare or whatever. So it's just a different world right now. And the schools absolutely do have to do more. But that's what we're there for. Whatever is needed to have our students be successful, that's what we want to be for them.
Yeah, and I see on the front of your website, again, NYSSBA, NYSSBA.org, it says supporting the whole child. What does that mean, supporting the whole child?
You know, it's not reading, writing, and arithmetic. Certainly, if nothing else, the pandemic really made us very aware, not that our students did not have mental issues before, but certainly they exacerbated the isolation, the ability for students to be able to be involved with social media. It had a tragic and really long-lasting effect on their mental health. And we're still struggling with that. Certainly, our schools have more mental health professionals than they had before in recognition of the problem. But it's something we're going to grapple with for a while. And I think once it kind of became apparent that there were these extreme mental health issues, it seemed like it almost gave, which was good, students more permission to be able to identify that they also had mental health issues. So, you know, when we have the suicide rates that we do for students, that's tragic. So we have to work. We can't teach students who have severe mental health problems. They have to be resolved first.
Yeah, it is a really serious situation. So serious, in fact, that the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, said parents are overstressed. Schools, communities need to respond. Parents are experiencing high levels of stress. Now, I wonder if that just applies also to your school board members. They're parents, many of them. And you said it's hard to retain them. Are people getting burnt out?
Well, you know, there's more things to occupy parents today, in addition to certainly their work schedule. But parents are very involved in, for example, their children's athletic careers. Sometimes I think everyone thinks their student's going to be a Division I athlete. So the little bit of time that they have, you don't see people volunteering to the extent that they did before. So if they are on a school board, are they able to commit the time? Because there is time. It's just, I remember when I got on the school board, my youngest was 3. And the oldest was 8 years old. And my husband said to me, do you think you've got the time to devote to now running for the school board? I was a PTA mom, a soccer mom, but I certainly had no idea. I'd never been to a school board meeting. And so I said to him, yes, of course. It's only, and at that time, most school boards had 2 meetings a month. I said, it's 2 meetings a month. And we've laughed about it for the last 40 years because it's never, even in the beginning, been 2 meetings a month. So I think sometimes when individuals get involved in school board service and they realize what it actually involves and what the demands are, not just going to 2 meetings a month, you know, they just don't have the time. Or perhaps they get on the board not really understanding what a school board member does and what their role is in a school, and they will end up becoming disenchanted. But truly, there is plenty to do if we stay in our lane of governance without stepping out of that lane and getting into situations of trying to manage the school district, which obviously is not our role.
Yeah, and each school district is different. It's a unique character, different people, obviously, different in many ways, different issues, but issues that are shared throughout. Now, I see in terms of school boards that the governor has signed a bill that requires student board members now. Now, that's interesting to me. Is that now being implemented?
It will be implemented. It is a law now, and it is going to become effective July 1 of next year. It'll be determined by every school district will have to have a representative, and BOCES, depending on how many component districts are a member of that BOCES. I believe it's 0 to 10 or 0 to 9. You can have one, but if you have, like, my BOCES has 15 component districts, you will have to have 2. So, it's something that certainly many districts, a third of the current districts in BOCES already have a non-voting member student. Formerly, there was a process whereby the district residents had to vote to determine if they wanted to have such a representative. That was removed with the governor signing into law that there will be a school board member that's a student. And so I think one thing that NISBA's hoping to do is to be able to provide education for those new young folks coming on so they'll know what to expect. What is a school board? They may be involved in their student council. They may not. So there will be guidelines that will be coming out that will kind of help the districts know, well, you know, does it have to be from a certain area? Does it have to be a student council member? Does it have to be an officer, et cetera, before they choose a member? But, you know, I used to, when I was the Area 4 director, which covered central New York pretty much, many of the districts that I visited had student board representatives who were very much involved. You know, they sat at the table. They can't vote. They can't go into executive session. But certainly they're very helpful in helping the school board member that's sometimes not directly involved in the school, other than if they have a child in school at their particular grade level. They may be in the elementary. They may know what's going on in the middle school. So it was helpful to have individuals. So I think it will be a positive thing, and, you know, once we get the guidelines that are going to be issued, I think we'll make sure that we help our members in the selection process of however we're directed to do that.
I think it's a great idea. Now, is there qualifications for the student? Does the student have to be on the honor roll? I mean, how do you choose the student?
That hasn't been determined. My understanding is they have to have been in the district 1 year, but I'm not sure if those guidelines have been formalized yet. Hopefully, because, you know, we want the communities to really have a say in this, they will be broad. so that people will have an opportunity to, you know, make the selections really that fits their particular community or their district.
Yeah. We are speaking with Sandra Ruffo, president of the New York State School Boards Association. Sandy, obviously school funding is the key here. The schools need to be funded appropriately. And as is pointed out on your website, the 2025 school funding is impacted without the federal stimulus aid, which districts received before. So we're already seeing word coming from the governor to keep budgets tight. What are you expecting as a result of this in school funding?
Well, I think, you know, for school board members that are involved in developing budgets, the most important part of our fiscal responsibility really goes around predictability. And so when the foundation aid formula was finally fully funded, it kind of gave us a bit of a feeling of reprieve that at least we knew, you know, what the funds were going to be. So when this past budget season came along, you know, shockwaves kind of went through the schools because, you know, the governor was proposing something that was totally different than what we were expecting. And school districts do their budgeting really before, oftentimes, the state budget comes out. So without knowing or at least having a sense of what's being talked about or what's going to be adopted, it makes it very challenging. This year, of course, could be that perfect storm. As you said, the federal stimulus funds ended last month, and we do have uncertainty about the foundation aid. The Rockefeller Institute that, you know, is doing the study to determine based on the hearings that they held throughout the state will be offering as of December 1st to the governor and the legislature suggestions for modifications. Those are non-binding. So they've heard a lot of voices. I attended one in person and I listened to two other virtually. And pretty much what's being said as far as what are the issues with the current foundation aid formula, that's where they are with that. But there's also issues other than what about the foundation aid, what about federal stimulus funds ending. You know, we have the issues of ongoing inflation, and that impacts so much within our schools. You know, the cost of food, fuel, building supplies, our health care. So that's an issue. We have mandates, and that's something we'll always live with. And certainly the one that's most commonly talked about currently is our e-buses.
Pardon me, that's electric buses, is what you're saying, right?
That's correct. And our student populations are changing. You know, we have 1 in 5 students currently that have special needs. Our poverty in the foundation aid formula hadn't been updated in over 2 decades.
Wow.
And we have a tax cap. There was no tax cap at the time that the original foundation aid formula was developed. And we can't just go because of the cap. If we need more money, we can't just go to the taxpayers who are already taxed and say we want more money because we're limited by that. We know there's growing student needs. You already mentioned the mental health supports. There's changes in technology. And we have fund balance limits. We have now 4%. So you can't, you know, have stockpiles of money. Money has to be returned. You can't just or use it to lower your taxing. And there's caps, for example, in New York City coming up on class sizes. And what will that impact have? So all of these things having to do with fiscal issues really are a very large area of concern for school board members across the state.
Yeah, and not to mention, and I always bring this up when we talk about funding of school and the foundation aid formula, the thing they don't change is that it gets funded, that's the schools, out of the property taxes. But in every community, you end up with people who own property who don't have kids and wonder why they have to pay for the school system. Even if their kids, they have kids earlier and they were, you know, they use the public schools, but the formula itself seems like it should just come out of the general fund, give the money to education and where the needs are.
Well, that's an issue is because sometimes when, as we've seen before, the foundation aid allotment is given, but then there are earmarked amounts. It could be $200,000 for this or $200,000 amount, which basically may not even apply to your district, but it takes away from the funding of the general, as you're saying, foundation aid monies. So that's a concern.
Well, and perhaps one of the biggest concerns that keeps rising, and probably one more element into this perfect storm you're talking about financially for schools in the state, is school safety. We've seen a number of bomb threats in the Capital Region recently. One school was getting one a day for about a week. Then you had in Schenectady, they just voted, and this is hundreds of thousands of dollars, to put metal detectors in the high school and middle schools. You know, obviously we're concerned about student safety. We're concerned about school shootings. And this is one more financial burden put on the schools, right?
Well, it is. And we know safety is first. I mean, we can't teach students if they have compromised mental health, and we can't teach students that are not safe. And, you know, I recently looked at a statistic, and as of September 19th of last month, there have been at least 50 school shootings this year in the United States. That's a horrifying statistic. And, you know, there certainly is the issue, certainly for communities, as to our resource officers in the schools. For some, I know in my home district, the kids love the resource officers. And there's other schools that they feel that they're frightening to students. But they certainly have increased in numbers. They've doubled since 2019 from 200 to 400. So I think, at least from my perspective, having SROs within the schools are a good thing. I think there's a feeling of comfort when you walk in a school, and perhaps they're there. But certainly it's a split opinion by individuals and parents.
How do you keep hope up? I mean, Sandy, you've been doing this for so long, and look at what's changed. Did you ever think way back when you first started a family and began working on these local boards, that you'd see a day when we were talking about police officers in schools and metal detectors?
No, but I think it's better we don't look too far ahead. I think we deal with the issues at hand as they come along. And, you know, we perhaps had issues back then. It's too far for me to remember that far ago. There were issues then. So it's just recognizing, and perhaps that's part of the disenchantment for some board members that maybe only last two terms, because they come in with lofty ideas and we're going to change this or we're going to change that. Number one, you have to realize that we only control a very tiny part of the budget, and that's one issue. And then I'm very hopeful. I'm hopeful for the future. You know, attending graduations and seeing these children and what they do, whether they go to college, where they're involved in a career, how could you not be hopeful? There are situations where students certainly are not in equitable situations as far as the education they receive. And I think that's part of what our State Education Department is trying to require with the regionalization studies that are coming, because, you know, you have some districts, and depending on the communities they're from, they're able to provide a number of, you know, AP courses. And as a result, you know, you see students that don't have the same opportunities. Very small districts that have 150 students or 200 students in the entire district. So in addition to, you know, their rural nature and the opportunities that they have, we want, through the regionalization, and I commend the State Education Department for proposing that we do this regionalization study so that we can find out where the educational disparities are, where the fiscal constraints are, and to be able to improve student opportunities and operational efficiencies. So it isn't consolidation. I think it's going to take an education process for people to understand we're not talking about consolidating schools. We're talking about sharing, pooling resources, you know, such as shared staff, maybe extracurricular programs and support services to provide all students with educational opportunities. And our BOCES, the 37 BOCES in New York State, will be convening discussions to develop regional plans to determine the strengths and weaknesses. It's an assessment questionnaire, which was developed by SED. And then every 10 years, there'll have to be a progress report that's done as well. So it's change. It's huge. Certainly, I think until people understand it, there will be a knee-jerk reaction about it. Like, you know, they're going to make our football team join with somebody else, or perhaps maybe take away something that we feel is very important to our district, and maybe we don't want to share. But I think the sharing will improve the equity in education for all children.
We're speaking with Sandra Ruffo. She's the president of the New York State School Boards Association. You can find out more at NYSSBA, NYSSBA.org. Sandy, that is a huge issue, that this statewide regionalization process, as you said, it's beginning this fall and is expected to repeat every 10 years. When you talked about the survey, does that mean that the public will be able to weigh in on this?
My understanding is this survey is going to be conducted with the superintendents of the component districts in each BOCES. My understanding is there will be opportunities for the public to provide input into the process as well. So this regionalization came from the State Education Department, and the regions just accepted it. So it was the brainchild of SED.
Thank you for that. Now, we're running quickly out of time, so I have a couple of more questions here hopefully you can share your thoughts on. And that is, when we talk about safety, obviously the children are the primary safety concern. But we've seen with some of the curriculum fights across the country that the school board members end up getting threatened, or there's very loud and sometimes scary situations at school board meetings. And I'm wondering, what the feedback is from around the state here, and if you think some of that might deter people from joining a school board.
Well, I think you mentioned before about every district really has a different culture depending what part of the state it is, whether you're rural, urban, suburban. So you may see some of these things, and we know those hot button items recently that have been talked about, and those things get people very upset. So are there individuals who have either resigned from school boards or who've chosen not to extend beyond the end of their term or really just quit altogether? Yes, I'm sure that's true. But there's one thing, school board members really need to have thick skin, because people say some things that, really aren't very pleasant to hear. But the bottom line is after you look yourself in the mirror and say, why am I here? And you're here for the children. So you're not there to run the district. And yes, there's going to be people that are going to yell at you. You're going to lose friends. I had a friend when I first got on the board, because I used to grumble about the superintendent. And then I got on the board and I realized I didn't know what I was talking about. And so I stopped grumbling about the superintendent, and she's not my friend anymore. So the bottom line is, you have to get into it for the right reason. And I think if you do that, you won't be as disenchanted as you may be. People that come in and, say, I want a lacrosse team, or I want to have a book ban, all sorts of things. First of all, we're not one board member. None of us have more authority than anyone else on the board. We work as a team collaboratively with the superintendent, and we learn a lot. Part of being a school board member is continuing education. And we don't know what we don't know unless you take advantage of these opportunities, which is one of the great things of an association like NYSSBA, because they provide wonderful training for us to be able to get better in what we're doing.
So how do we clone you? Because you're so reasonable, and you seem to get it, that it's about the kids, and that, yeah, we might have a difficult time, but we're here for a reason. You really do have to have people of integrity on these school boards, don't you?
Well, you know what? I never met a school board member or a superintendent who assumed their role to do a bad job. So I think if we go into it understanding, because there's going to be people that are going to come on our school boards that we don't agree with, but they're a voice, and they're a voice of our community. So I think if you recognize that everyone has a need to provide their input, we need to listen to each other. And sometimes in our world, we're not listening so much to each other. And there are so many different aspects of educating our students. There is room for all of these people to give their input. And I think if people feel welcomed within a school district and on a school board, you'll be more apt to have, less conflict within your community. And we need to listen to our communities. That's been loud and clear, certainly more in recent years. You're not listening to us.
Well, Sandra, here's my final question, and it has to do with a big issue that affects all students, all people these days, and that's cell phones. Now, we're seeing the governor, and we've already been talking about the mental health issues, and part of that is the cell phones and what's happening when they're in the students' hands while they're in school. So there's been these moves to sort of ban them from the schools. There's not a statewide ban yet, but it seems like the governor may be moving in that direction. Where's the School Boards Association on this?
Well, I think as school boards, we have to remember we've got 700 districts almost, and there's not one approach. So from the perspective of school boards, Yeah, there is a cell phone ban going to come. There's no doubt about that. But members from at least the school board's area would like to make sure that local control is part of that, because we need flexibility in the implementation. We need input from teachers, administrators, parents, students. And, you know, the schools are going to start initiating policies. Those are the kinds of things that we probably could use some help with. How to prepare students for readiness for digital learning is why we use cell phones. There are so many benefits to having school phones, and we know the cons. We know the distraction. You know, we know the learning loss that happens in classrooms. So it interferes with our students' relationships with in-person interaction. But we also know that there's positive. I know of one district that uses cell phones exclusively, a great deal in their instruction, and it prepares students for the readiness for digital learning. So, you know, I think one size doesn't fit all, and there is going to be a cell phone ban, but hopefully the governor did hold listening sessions, but there has been no legislation yet. So I think it's a matter of let the districts that are all very different, once the ban comes into place, to have some flexibilities as so that it works within their district. We know what the reasons for having it. We know what social media has done, and we know that, you know, the distractions that happen as it relates to cell phone use.
Well, I can't thank you enough. Sandra Ruffo, president of the New York State School Boards Association, for joining us this week on the Capital Connection. You've been candid. We've talked about some very serious issues affecting school boards and schools, and I hope you'll come back again at some point in the future so we can revisit some of these things.
I would love to, David. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.
Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.